Hello and welcome to the Real Jaws Minute. I am Jeremy Sternhagen.
I'm Tyson Ferris.
And with us today, we have a special guest, author Michael A. Smith, author of the book Jaws 2, The Making of a Hollywood Sequel. Michael, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so Tyson and I don't normally have such a royalty as guests. We've had a bunch of friends on as guests to talk about Jaws, but we haven't had anyone of quite your prestige. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So this book, Jaws 2, The Making of a Hollywood Sequel, I actually only learned about it when I first contacted you within the last couple of weeks. And it is so thick, I haven't even managed to finish it yet, but I am pretty far into it. It's quite substantial and quite impressive, so congrats.
Well, thank you. Labor of love.
Oh, yeah.
And so my question right out of the gates is, what made you pick Jaws 2, as opposed to any other film?
Well, two friends of mine, Matt Taylor and Jim Beller, did a book that came out in, 2011 called Jaws, Memories from Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Oh, it's a great book. Yeah.
Yes. I've known them both for many years. I was there when they first started discussing it, and I was actually the first person who got to review it. When we went up to Martha's Vineyard in July of 2011 for the book release party, my friend Lou Pisano, Lou sadly passed away in December. We were on Main Street in Edgartown. And if you've ever been to Martha's Vineyard, Edgartown looks the same as it did in Jaws. They're very particular about who and what comes on the island. There is no Walmart. There are no McDonald's. There's a Dairy Queen that snuck on in the 50s. So
I want to live there now.
I was talking. Well, Lou and I are actually, we'd asked Jim if he's doing a Jaws 2 version. And he said, no, this took too long to write. He said, you should do it. And Lou can help you because you both write and you both like Jaws 2. So later that day, we were on Main Street, and we were talking to Tom Dunlop, who plays Timmy in the movie, but who is now a very accomplished nautical author. And we said, hey, we're going to do a book on Jaws 2. And Tom laughed and said, nobody wants to read a book on Jaws 2. And I was like,
He's wrong, by the way.
Yes. It's like, you don't understand, Tom. A lot of people, their first introduction to Jaws was Jaws 2 because they were too young to see Jaws in the theater. And he said, well, maybe if you do an e-book, maybe some people will look at it. And I said, no, we're going to do a real book. And he said, I tell you what, if you guys show me you're serious, I'll help you if you need to get in touch with somebody, because he's stayed in touch with everybody.
Sure.
So, July 1st, 2011, Lou and I said, we're going to do it. And, the original, edition came out, was turned in June 30th, 2015. So it took us really 4 years to get everything done and put on paper.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that the first, a lot of people's first experience with Jaws is Jaws 2. Tyson and I recently recorded our thoughts on Jaws 2 for an episode that at this time hasn't aired yet. By the time people hear this, it will have aired. I'm 40, and so I first discovered Jaws probably in the late 80s as a 10-year-old, and I couldn't recall which one I saw first. It's very possible that the first Jaws, or at least bits of Jaws that I ever saw, were a cable airing of Jaws 2. And what I mentioned to Tyson was that at that age, I had no reverence for Jaws. So in my little 10-year-old brain, all Jaws and all the sequels were the same. they were of the same quality. So it wasn't until later in life that I kind of either figured out on my own or, you know, just through pop culture, like that, you know, Jaws okay. was the special one and Jaws 2 was maybe viewed as not as good. But I really appreciate Jaws 2. It's got some really cool stuff going for it. So I was pretty, I was amazed and excited to find out that someone tackled this movie the way you did. So it was
pretty cool. I've always said if it didn't have Jaws in the title, that it would be, I think, looked on even better in the film community. I'm going to be 59 next week. So I actually moved to Florida the week Jaws opened, but I didn't see it until September. For my 15th birthday, my dad wanted to know what I wanted to do. And I said, well, let's go see this movie. And I had seen a commercial for Dog Day Afternoon and with Pacino on the street yelling, Attica, Attica. So I said, I want to go see that movie. So my dad took me to the mall, dropped me off. And of course, it's rated R. So I wasn't old enough to see it. And I'm standing outside the box office with a sad face, I'm sure. And the woman in the box office says through her little speaker microphone, she goes, have you seen Jaws yet? And I was like, no. So I went and saw Jaws, and that's September 21st, 1975. Wow. That's the day I got hooked. No that's pun
fantastic.
Intended.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that actually kind of leads me into some of my other questions. I want to talk about Jaws 2, of course, but also I am curious about your experience with Jaws. And just I did notice on Facebook you have a very impressive Jaws memorabilia and collectible collection. And I was very excited to see you have the same Jaws puzzle that I had in the 90s. It's the one that has kind of a lighter blue frame around it. And I think it says 500 pieces, but anyway.
Yes, one of the bigger. They did like the different movie posters.
Yeah, I need to call my mom and see if she, I'm sure she took a picture of me, you know, standing over it as a proud 13-year-old having completed it.
Well, Walmart has a new version, 500-piece puzzle, a poster puzzle, but it comes in an old, it looks like an old Blockbuster video case.
Oh, that's great.
$9.99.
Wow.
So, Jaws 1, like, I'm just going to guess, is it your favorite movie?
Well, let's, time out. It's not called Jaws 1.
I just am trying to differentiate. I'm just being very clear.
It's just called Jaws.
Everyone knows what I mean.
I know what you mean. But the only thing I don't like is when people call the shark Jaws.
Yeah, nope. Yeah, we don't care for that either.
We generally used Bruce at our podcast. Yes. And I know Jaws 2 has...
Or the shark, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
Which has Jaws, you know. Yes. But Jeremy, my whole point is you wouldn't call Alien, Alien 1.
Well, I don't know. If we ever do an Alien podcast, maybe I will.
All right. Okay. Do as you will, sir.
Okay. So my question was, Jaws, is it your favorite movie?
It is.
Okay.
It is not. Sometimes I refer to it as the greatest movie, and then people say, oh, it's better than Citizen Kane. And it's like, no, obviously there are better made movies or films that are revered more. But Jaws is the film that I compare all other movies to. And I've yet to really have the same reaction to a movie that I had with Jaws.
Yeah,
I can relate.
I absolutely, as two guys that did it minute by minute, obviously we're right in that boat with you.
Yeah, two guys who have committed over 2,000 minutes of their lives talking about Jaws. Yes,
perfect. You've done well.
How often do you rewatch Jaws?
I probably intentionally watch it 2 or 3 times a year. Thanks to cable, it's on so many times that if I flip through the channels and it's on, I just leave it there. My best friend Matt and I saw it in the theater, its first release 157 times.
Whoa.
Wow.
That's amazing.
We both worked for, we both worked at the movie theater, so it was a lot easier to
okay. So that's, go in there. That, that you know, explains
sit,
a little bit.
Sit through two or three shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if I would have worked at a theater at that time, I probably would have too.
So, so you would, you wouldn't actually call it working though, right?
Well, back then when you were an usher, you had to stand in the back of the theater and make sure people weren't talking and smoking and putting their feet up. Now, you know, people are on their phone and nobody ever comes in to check. That's one of my gripes.
Oh, boy. I'm right there with you, man.
Yep. Tyson and I have both made investments in our home theaters so that we don't have to do that as much. I still love movie theaters and want to go, but every time I go, I'm frustrated. So it reaffirms why I watch movies at home.
Oh yeah, I like both, but I like the aspect of people around you and hearing their reaction.
Yeah, there's some.
Unless you're in,
and that being said, Jaws is very much an audience movie, I feel.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think most people relate to Chief Brody. You're kind of the everyman, and you're out there, and you're not in your element. And I think that's one reason people relate to it, because they have a character that they can associate themselves with.
Absolutely. It just got brought up to us very recently that he tends to kind of bonk into things, and we did notice it a little bit, but one of our Facebook friends, you know, posited that they were intentionally trying to make him look kind of more kind of Barney Fife-ish, like kind of this clumsy sheriff, and then later he you know, he gets on the sea and, you know, gets his, you know, hikes himself up by his bootstraps and gets to work on the shark, and so it's that's kind of his arc, is what somebody posited, which I thought was interesting. And he can tell
his progress by how clumsy he is.
Yeah,
as he gets progressively less clumsy.
Yeah, yeah. And even though he
came there from New York, he was a New York City cop, so
yeah,
he had to know his way around a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they just kind of show him he's fumbling with paintbrushes and he's knocking his head into signs, and, you know, and then even in Jaws 2, he knocks his head in the hallway of the house into a lamp. And anyway, so that's something yep. they kind of kept going, I guess. I think that's probably something that Roy Scheider brought to the character. He's like, this is a guy that just kind of doesn't totally know where his head is all the time, you know.
Well, Roy was very good at playing I'll say the everyman. You know, he was always not, I want to say the reluctant hero, but you know, he had a couple films that he really took the lead and ran in, like All That Jazz, and I would have loved to have seen him in The Deer Hunter, but that's just, I think that's just the way people relate to him as. I ran his fan club for 8 years. And,
oh, wow.
And the letters, I actually, girl living in Florida, we went up to Pensacola, Fort Walton Beach, when they were making Jaws 2, and I put a, dropped a, like a fan note off at the Holiday Inn for him, and maybe a week later, I got a letter from him and from his publicist giving me permission to start his fan club. So,
oh, wow.
You know, he'd get, yeah. And all the fan mail he would get, people just, you know, I see myself when I see you. So
that's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I've always, he's always struck me as kind of a slightly, harder edged, Jimmy Stewart kind of.
Yeah. Cause like even Jimmy Stewart, you know, like I always say, the man who shot Liberty Valance, how he kind of grew from that, but he was always like the everyman, or even Gary Cooper, that you could relate to, but then all of a sudden you don't know if you could rise up to be the quote unquote hero like they did.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the audience. It's like an audience movie, an audience reaction movie. I noticed, on your Facebook page, you had some brief clips of audience reactions for Jaws 2. And it struck me that that movie, perhaps even more than the first one, Jaws 2 really is an audience movie. Like, I can imagine seeing that in a large theater full of people who were invested in caring. That movie would be that would take that movie up a notch.
Oh, definitely. Well, first off, you have the suspense from Jaws and the excitement and building on it, because they were running trailers in December. My friend Matt and I, who I talked about before, we knew that Universal had stuck a advanced trailer on a movie called The Greek Tycoon. So we would look in the paper for every theater that was playing it, and if we were in that area, like it started at 7, we'd go in like at 5 to 7 and say, "Oh, we just need to use the bathroom," and then we'd duck in the back of the theater and watch the Jaws 2 trailer.
This was the December before it came out. So yes. 77. Okay.
Would have been, December 77. So it was highly anticipated. We waited in line. We were the first people in line at our theater to see it the day it opened. We watched all 5 shows. So it was just, in the audience reaction, I love that I found that clip. I have some old television footage from talking about Jaws, where they also showed some kind of infrared inside the theater reactions to stuff. And, both you get the big scares. I mean, Ben Gardner's head is the scariest thing in the history of films. I showered people rows behind me with popcorn. It's just like the most unexpected, scene. So, and like I said, it's one reason I like going to the theater, because I like the audience reaction, and I like seeing if they enjoy it like I did. Now, unfortunately, I did see The Life of Brian in a little theater in Kansas, and I was the only person laughing. Most people walked out, but most times you share your experience with the audience.
Yeah, Life of Brian's a bit divisive. I imagine even more so than Jaws 2. So,
especially in small town Kansas.
Yeah. Well, you're speaking to a couple of Life of Brian fans, I think. So you're in good company.
Yeah. Oh yeah, love the Python.
Yeah, love the Python.
What was your what was your reaction to Jaws 2 initially, the first viewing? Like, how did you feel about it?
Oh, we loved it. It was back in the days. It was a big 1,200 seat theater that was packed, that had like the big red velvet curtains in front, and the curtains parted. And when Roy Scheider's name came on screen, the audience burst into applause, title came on, burst into applause. And the first time you're just really literally on the edge of your seat, just watching and because it's continuing your favorite story.
Yeah, I definitely, of course I wouldn't have been in your shoes to see where they went with it, but I do like the fact that they did stick with the Brody characters and carry them over. I do like that there's a through line of that. So
well,
Tyson,
there was a lot of, and I was say there was a lot of different scripts, all of them with Brody, but until really they kind of had Roy on the ropes and he had to do it. Mm-hmm. There were other one scenario had Quinn's son coming to town to claim the reward. And
what was it? His name was Sideburns, right?
Yes.
Sideburns.
Yes, Billy Van Zandt. <What's> his...
all the different ideas, every single idea I read about as a potential script idea, I want to see that movie. Like, not one of them did I go like, that sounds dumb. Like, I want to see one that had Hooper in it. I want to see Hooper and Brody. I want to see Quint's son. Like, all of them, I don't know if I even care that much what the the background story is, as long as there's good, you know, it's a good story and there's a shark involved.
Exactly.
Like I could have gotten behind any one of those ideas. So what I was going to say earlier is that, so on our podcast, one of the things that was a constant topic of conversation as we discussed Jaws 1 is that I had seen all the sequels and Tyson never had. And so at the time of this recording, Tyson, of course, has seen Jaws. He has seen Jaws 2 specifically for this podcast and has yet to see Jaws 3 and 4. So Tyson went into Jaws 2 as a Jaws 2 virgin.
Just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And what was your reaction?
It was way better than I thought it was going to be. I just never had reached out to any of the Jaws sequels, just because I love Jaws so much, and it's like pretty much a perfect film. And I was like, why do you need more? You just watch that again.
Yeah.
So
you don't want to end up with like a Caddyshack 2 and get burned.
Well, you know, and you know, I'm also a Star Wars fan, so I know what being burned is like. So, honestly, I was shocked that they got John Williams back, and because I didn't know anything about it, I didn't know. I was just.
I went in
completely oblivious of anything that was going to happen, and I really enjoyed myself right up until that helicopter attack, and then it kind of lost me.
from the helicopter to the end, I think you weren't as into it, right?
No, it kind of lost me, and I never quite got back into it. But up until that point, I was pretty into it. So yeah.
Well, I think Carl wrote that scene, and if you're a Jaws fan, you must be if you're listening to this, please keep good thoughts for Carl Gottlieb. Carl had a heart attack a couple of weeks ago. He's on the mend, but keep him in your thoughts.
We just had that go across the Facebook page. Everybody's keeping good thoughts for him. So we're sad to hear that, yeah. But Carl, you know,
get better,
man.
Yes, and I think I included it in the book, but I took Carl and I went to dinner out in L.A. and I took him to this nice restaurant, and he told me some great stories. But I took him there to ask him if he would write the foreword for the book, which he very graciously agreed to. But when we were sitting there, he says, you know, this place opened in 1969, and I had tab number 32. So when I would eat here, I would say, just put it on number 32. But he told me the story that he got the idea for the helicopter scene when he was working on the film MASH. And one day during shooting, one of the helicopters crashed. And he said he was amazed. That's how it was, where the rotors turn and the blades fly off. Because usually in movies back then, when a helicopter crashed, it just exploded. So he always wanted to put that scene in a film, and that's why he put that in Jaws 2.
Hmm. Well,
I love the idea of it.
No, the most realistic part of it is the helicopter breaking apart. That wasn't the mm-hmm. problem I had with it.
I actually kind of wish, I know it's a famous deleted scene. You can see the shark attack the pilot underwater, and given just kind of the spirit of this movie and how it's kind of no holds barred when it comes to how much screen time the shark gets, I'm surprised they cut that scene.
Well, something I want to mention that I just found out, a fan had written me about this. Jerry Baxter, the helicopter pilot, they dubbed his voice. And Carl's first wife, Allison, she created what is known now as ADR. Jaws was the first film where they hired people to do the background noise, you know, talk like they're on the beach and stuff. Michael McKean is in Jaws.
Oh, wow.
But someone said, if you listen to that voice, is it Howard Hessman doing the voice of the helicopter pilot? And the more I listen to it now, it sounds like him. And he and Carl are longtime friends. They were both in the committee together. So when Carl's back on his feet, I need to ask him if he arranged for Howard Hessman to be the voice of the helicopter pilot.
That's he's WKRP.
Yes.
Guy, right? Yes.
Yes.
I know him the most from the movie Clue, a movie I've seen 1,000 times, but I had no
idea. Jeff Kramer.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't make
that's amazing.
Howard Hessman was
I didn't make the
They always said Howard Hessman was lucky because he's the only one not who's not in the credits in Clue. All three versions.
Head of the class and Clue, yeah. That's where I always knew him from. That's yeah, we discovered in our research for Jaws 1 that June Foray voices Mike Brody.
For one line or two lines.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which blew
Rocky
our minds.
The squirrel.
But that was
the ponds for old ladies. That's the line.
So, all right, well, I need to...
Oh, sorry.
I'm going to go...
Hold on.
Amateur.
Yeah. What an asshole.
I need to go back and rewatch that scene now in Jaws 2 to see if I hear Howard Hessman, because I feel like he has a very distinctive voice.
He does, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the phone ringing. That happened to me once during... We were live, we were podcasting, but... I was able to explain it because it was Ricky Schroeder calling me to talk about the book. So I was like, hey,
oh, for
gotta
real?
Take this. Gotta take this.
That's awesome. That yeah, and that was the I started reading your book and I texted Tyson. The first thing I texted him was because Tyson wanted to know, like, oh yeah, let me know how good the book is. And I said, well, first bombshell, Ricky Schroeder was in it. So I learned something literally like in the first 5 minutes. That's pretty cool.
So I almost instantly posited that he probably left when the original director left. Is that correct?
He was retained by Universal, and Verna Fields had worked with Mark Gilpin before, and she recommended him, and he came in and read for the role, and the day before they started shooting, when they picked up shooting with Jeannot, they replaced him with Mark Gilpin. And Mark Gilpin says that for years they kind of battled each other. Mark Gilpin was actually on his way out to Hollywood to sign his contract to be in The Champ when the studio decided to go with Ricky Schroeder because he looked more like Jackie Cooper did in the original film.
Wow.
And then when Mark had a few weeks of a storyline on Silver Spoons, and then Mrs. Schroeder realized who he was, and he only did one episode, she had him fired.
Oh man.
Oh, wow.
So she held a grudge.
Oh well, yeah.
Man.
Hey, but that's Hollywood, baby.
Well, the thing was, you guys obviously don't know this because you're younger than I am. Ricky Schroeder was the Kodak kid back when we used to use film. They would do TV commercials and always be this very good-looking, blonde, smiley boy running through fields and stuff. And they dyed his hair black to match Scheider's for him to play Sean, and there are pictures in the book of him with Scheider on the set. But part of the contract, his mother insisted that when he was done with the shoot, that they dye his hair back blonde. And for whatever reason, everything went wrong, and he left Florida with green hair.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say going black to blonde is tough on the old follicles. So
I'm just realizing a trend in my life now that all of these actors who are famous for these very distinctive roles, like Howard Hessman in WKRP and Ricky Schroeder for a number of things, and you know, Michael McKean for a number of things. As a kid, they were first and foremost, Howard Hessman was from Clue, Michael McKean was from Clue, and Ricky Schroeder was from this movie with Elliot Gould called The Last Flight of Noah's Ark. So I have this, all these actors are burned into my brain for their like lesser known efforts.
Well, it's just what you grew up with them with. I mean,
I know, you know, right?
You know, Sean Connery was James Bond to my dad. I grew up with Roger Moore. My son knows Pierce Brosnan. So,
yeah. I think I knew Sean Connery from The Man Who Would Be King before I knew him as James Bond.
Ah, good movie.
Because that was just a movie that got played a lot at my house. So
That's not half bad.
Yeah, it could do worse, right? Yeah. It could have been like Zardoz or something.
Could have been Zardoz, yeah. That's the thing I was thinking.
Oh, Zardoz.
Oh, so when I was trying to push Tyson over the edge to see Jaws 2 for the first time, some of the big selling points I used were, number one, Roy Scheider's in it. Number two, it's composed by John Williams. And there's a few more, but I want to pause on John Williams for a second. You mentioned that when the Roy Scheider title came up and the Jaws title came up, everybody cheers. The opening title score by John Williams is, I think, among his best works. And
it's brilliant. I just actually this past Saturday I saw Weird Al in concert with a 41-piece orchestra, and the show opens with just the orchestra, and they played movie themes. They played Raiders and Star Wars and Superman.
Oh wow!
And I said to the person with me, I said, it's amazing that John Williams, he paints pictures with his music. And a lot of fans actually do prefer the Jaws 2 score to Jaws.
It's a fantastic score.
Yeah. It definitely feels like it's more like John Williams' other scores in that there's, you know, multiple themes at work, and it's a bit more, I'm not going to say better, but there's definitely more going on. I don't know if I would say it's better, but I definitely think it's might be the best thing about Jaws 2, in that it's John Williams is probably incapable of phoning it in, but the opening theme, where the title comes up, and then second to that, one of my favorite John Williams cues, and it might be better than any cue in Jaws, the first Jaws, is is it Marge, who gets killed when little Sean is on the of that music cue, and that shot of the shark coming up from deep. I can listen to that music cue. That might be the most terrifying music cue in movie history, at least to me. Maybe it's because I associate it with the shark, but I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about. But that music cue just gets me every time.
Oh yeah, and it's a tough scene anyway, because here's Marge, you know, sacrificing herself for this little annoying kid that just kind of tagged along.
Yeah. There's something about, like, at least in Jaws 1, sorry, Tyson, in the first Jaws, there's...
Just Jaws. It's just called Jaws.
Yes. So here's what I was going to say. In the first Jaws, other than Quint...
Jaws? You don't have to say
every
first.
Other...
It's first because it's called Jaws.
Yeah. Go along with
try
me
it,
on this.
Try
in the first Jaws.
Try it again. No, you're still doing it.
What? I said the first Jaws.
Yeah.
What
it's
did I say?
It's just Jaws. It's not the first Jaws. It's just Jaws.
In Jaws.
There you go.
In Jaws.
Is that so hard?
Other than... It is, apparently. Other than Quint, every other shark victim is someone you have just met. Like, you have little to no familiarity with them. a little bit Ben Gardner, but he's not particularly painted as a sympathetic character prior to that. In Jaws 2, all the kids that we lose in the second half of the movie, well, how many? Two?
Eddie.
We know them. Eddie and Marge. Yeah, we know them a little bit.
The body count's only, what, like five in Jaws 2?
I'm not sure what it is.
You figured the two divers, the water skier, and the woman driving the boat.
And then Eddie?
Eddie and Marge.
Helicopter pilot.
Helicopter pilot, and then a scuba diver, but he just has the bends.
Yeah, so I think if I counted right, I was at seven.
Yeah.
So where I was going with that is between Marge and Eddie, these are two characters who you kind of know. You've seen them through most of the movie, and their deaths are them, you know, screaming in terror. So one thing I can say for sure is, as a kid, my memory is that Jaws 2 is, as far as building up a fear of sharks in me, Jaws 2, I think, did way more damage than Jaws 1. Because the Jaws, the shark, those shots of the shark coming up underwater are very nightmarish. The scariest death in Jaws to me is the man, the estuary man in the boat, Ted Grossman.
Ted Grossman, yes.
Purely because you see the shark underwater. That gets me. And that, I think, is why the Marge death gets me as well. It's just, I get like goosebumps just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of things that work really well in Jaws 2. And for the most part, it's the music and kind of the action set pieces with the sailboats especially. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, my I don't know if we should bring up my biggest argument on it, that they should have kept I posited that they should have kept Brody as this insane person that everybody thinks he's crazy, and that not actually showing the shark until about 2/3 of the way into the film. And when you finally realize that there actually is a shark that's killing people, you realize at the same time as I think it's Eddie and the prom queens. Who is that? Tina, is that right?
Tina.
Yeah. Eddie and Tina? Do I have that right? Yeah. Yep. I posited that would be the first time the audience finally knows that Brody's correct. And the entire time up till that is he just looked like this insane person, because that's kind of how they portray him. Except we as the audience know that there actually is a shark. So it kind of deflates that a little bit. And
so in your version, we would know for sure there's a shark in the opening
scene?
Correct. Okay.
Because I feel like that's how it was written, but that's not how it was filmed. That's just my theory. So,
like they made no effort to make it feel like maybe there is, maybe there isn't a shark?
Yeah, because like in the first Jaws, there's a lot of, technically you don't know what takes Chrissy out, you know, like, I mean,
it's true,
you know, it's not until Kittner, right, that you actually see a shark. Is that right?
Yeah. And it's silhouetted. Yeah.
So anyway, but, I'm just saying, I felt like this was actually written by Gottlieb to be a little bit more, not quite so showy as far as the shark goes. Anyway, that's just my theory. So. I don't know what you
and Michael,
I don't know what you think about that, but
uh-oh.
Did we lose Michael?
Uh-oh.
Michael?
Oh, how's that?
Hey, there you go.
There you go.
Oh, sorry about that. I muted to cough. I forgot to unmute.
You heard everything we said then. That's good.
Nobody laughed when I said, "Did you just say the first Jaws?"
Did I say it?
Yeah. You did. Caught you. Well, the studio wanted a lot more of the shark to be seen. Jeannot figured that, you know, the shark's out of the bag. People want to see it. And you have to remember that the only reason we don't see a lot of the shark in Jaws, and let me get on in the bandwagon here. The reason you don't see the shark in the first Jaws is because it didn't work. Spielberg intended to show it in the first scene with Chrissy. But and that, I think, is what makes Jaws such a great film, because they had to improvise, and Joe Alves came up with the idea of the barrels and everything else, because they just couldn't get the shark to work. Otherwise, we would have seen a lot more of it.
Yeah,
I think I'm all on board with lots of shark. Oh, yeah. I like Tyson's idea.
No, but
like the mystery.
My point is I get why they did it the way it's done, but they didn't then. I feel like what was written and then what was done were not together. Do you know what I mean? I feel like what Gottlieb's writing for Jaws 2 is to have it be a lot like Jaws, where you're not seeing the shark and you're thinking Brody's crazy. I'm not saying the film has to be that way. I'm just saying if they were going to go show the shark a bunch in the beginning, that kind of negates a lot of the stuff we're doing with Brody later. Does that make sense?
Well, in the original script by Howard Sackler, his original treatment before Dorothy Tristan rewrote some of it, there wasn't a lot of the shark, and Brody is just paranoid. He has nightmares. He can't even go into a swimming pool without panicking, and he is seen more as he's losing his mind. It's a much deeper and darker story than what ended up on screen.
Wow. Yeah. So one thing that permeates Jaws 2, I was really there's serious like PTSD, happening with Brody.
Yeah, the movie kind of walks this weird line where it's like a PTSD kind of intense story, but then it jumps. I was about to say jumps the shark, but that's not what it is. I remember my initial impression as a youngster was that especially the structure of Jaws 2 is that it's almost like a slasher movie, where the kids are just stalked one by one, and that the whole PTSD story. I guess once Roy Scheider, once Brody has it confirmed by Tina that there is a shark, then the movie just changes gears completely, which makes sense. But I also feel like that maybe is a missed opportunity, because the moment where it's confirmed that there is a shark by Tina to Brody, I feel like Brody just kind of goes, okay, I'm going, bye. Like, there's no like big aha moment in his eyes, or like a knowing, I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's like, it was never in doubt. Like, never once does he doubt his own thoughts, but I feel like there was a moment missed there.
Yeah. So I get why they don't have the aha moment, because he never doubted himself, but there should be a moment where he did, in my opinion.
Yes, yeah. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Like, that they could have walked that line a little bit better. And if I'm hearing you right, Tyson, I think that you're feeling that maybe that's what Gottlieb had in mind, but the film didn't quite deliver on that.
I think he was coming at it from kind of the original Jaws angle, and then I can't remember the director's name, something very French sounding. There you go. Yes. He just was like, hey, we're just going to show the shark a whole bunch. So, I don't know. I think it works. I honestly think the film works pretty great. Honestly, but I just as a filmmaker, in a storyteller, like I can just see where like those two things aren't quite in parallel with each other. You know, they seem to be kind of cross-secting, mm-hmm. and not quite on the same page. So anyway, that's just one of the things of Jaws 2 that I noticed. But
I feel like Jaws 2 is like 2 minutes away of scenes away from being like a lot better. Like, I love Jaws 2, but I feel like it, where its strengths are is like action set pieces. You know, anytime the shark is on screen, it's working really well. And just, I think Jeannot Swark's strength was in just like doing the set pieces. But tying it all together, I want more of what Carl Gottlieb
does. It seems like his strong
does.
Suit is the action and not maybe so much on the people stuff, which is kind of what makes Jaws really great. Yeah. Is it's the people, it, you know? Ironically, it's not the shark stuff that makes Jaws great. It's the people stuff that makes Jaws great. So,
yeah, and it's a little bit the inverse.
Yeah, a little
Jaws
bit.
Too.
Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did. I appreciated when reading your book, Michael, that the pulling Mike out of the water scene and the Marge getting devoured scene, those always stuck out to me as huge moments in the movie. And it was, I found like a huge sense of satisfaction reading in your book how the cast, like when they saw those dailies, were also just like, they were floored by how good
it
worked.
It's
because I watch those scenes and I'm just like, holy cow. Like that takes the scene of the shark jumping onto the orca in Jaws. And like, that's an amazing scene, but there are some shots and some things in Jaws too, that just kind of, you can tell they were trying to beat Jaws. And in many ways they did.
Yeah. With some of the action scenes. Yeah. Some of the action pieces.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I just thought of something here. So I may be alone here, but I'm going to pose this question to you, Mike. Why do I buy the shark jumping onto the orca and cracking it in half, and I don't buy it sinking a helicopter? Like, why is that seem?
Well, I mean,
why does that seem earned in Jaws 1? Because they're both ridiculous, right? It's both things that wouldn't.
Well,
have
you ever? There's some footage on YouTube of sharks jumping into boats. So
yeah, so maybe
it's been known to happen.
Yeah. No helicopter footage of yet though. Right?
No helicopter footage.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. I guess that answers it.
Yeah.
Land of make believe.
So, no. Any advice for Tyson?
Yes.
Who has yet to see Jaws 3 and Jaws 4? Where do you stand on those without giving away anything to Tyson?
Just keep telling yourself that Jaws 3D is the most successful 3D movie of the 20th century. Remember that, let me paraphrase Michael Caine, to give you an idea about Jaws 2. He said, I've never seen it. He says, I understand it's not a good film. He says, but I have seen the house that it built and it's spectacular.
I love that quote. I love that quote.
Yes.
That's
so
a quote.
Go in with an open mind. You know, that's what I'll say. Go in with an open mind. Jaws Revenge has a couple good set pieces.
Yeah.
The premise is weird and has multiple endings. Lance Guest tells the story of the film opened on Friday, and Sunday night the director called him and said, hey, I need you at the studio tomorrow. We need to do some reshoots. And he says,
shoot a new ending.
Didn't the film open Friday? He goes, yes. Yes, it did. So,
whoa.
So, but they're fun. But they're fun.
That's crazy.
I have seen both endings, and I know that Tyson and I will spend many minutes discussing
it. Make a drinking game out of it.
Sure.
Or,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Hey, so I just thought of one other thing I wanted to ask you. So my idea for Jaws 2 was basically do the same film, right, that they have, but you don't have the Brodies there. You have it on a different beach in a different part of the country. and you have the same kind of youth culture. They like to boat, all that stuff. And then that sheriff, he finds out that there's a shark, you know, attacks happening. So he calls up Brody and has him come in as a consultant. And that's how that's how you get the Brodies in there. Whereas, you know, instead of
the conceit that a shark went to the same town, same place, and attacked the same family.
Yeah. Basically, you kind of get around that you have to yeah. let go. You know.
I'm sorry. I was chuckling. Wait till you see Jaws of Revenge.
Yeah, I was gonna say you have to suspend disbelief for all the Jaws sequels that the shark is pursuing the Brodies.
I think that's kind of where they went wrong with this. It's like you can have these people come in, like you could have a Hooper come in, you could have a Brody come in as consultants because they've done this before. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I enjoy it. I don't think the studio would do it unless it's. Because you need more familiar characters. That's the drawing card of a sequel.
Sure, sure.
Carl Gottlieb once told me the only sequel that loses money is the last one. So
there you go. Yeah.
It's that
old Simpsons adage. We're going to keep making these until they no longer turn a profit.
Exactly.
I do have one more thing, and Tyson, this may not make it, because we have a guest we're trying to get, Michael, and if we end up not getting him, then this will be totally irrelevant, so Tyson can edit it out. But a friend of ours who was a guest on the Jaws Minute, the Real Jaws Minute, a friend of his was a gaffer on Jaws 2, so he worked during the production, and his name is Ray Ochoa. And so we are doing our best to get him as a guest on a future episode, but he would have been on set through most of the production. So,
cool.
Has his name ever come up in your research?
I did not go that far into the cast or into the crew. One thing that I'm most proud of in the book is that I was able to track down all of the teen actors that had been hired and then fired. Because a lot of them didn't act anymore. The only one I couldn't find was Sarah Holcomb. I did track down her brother. Sarah was, if you remember, she is the girl that Tom Hulce takes home in the shopping cart in Animal House. And she was Michael O'Keefe's girlfriend in Caddyshack. But she had a lot of personal issues in the early 80s. When I met with David out in California, he told me that, you know, here she was. She's 18, 19 years old, and she lived with Hunter S. Thompson for 6 months. So,
yeah. Enough said, I guess.
She basically just abandoned everything just for her health and her sanity. He was a liaison between her and I, and you know, and I had no problem with her saying no, and you know, I put it in the book. We tried to contact her. She very, you know, graciously declined, and I wrote a little bit about her in the book, and David emailed me after it came out and said that, you know, he and his family were pleased with the way I handled her. So that was the big coup, and I tried to get I'm happy to say, with the exception of John Williams, who was always busy, every person that's in the opening credits that was alive when we did the book is in the book. So, and then I was able to track down about 12 more people for the expanded edition to get a little more in-depth stuff. But, you know, it's a great. I'm proud of it. I know Lou is proud of it. It sucks that he's not here to because he would have loved to have talked about it, because he loved Jaws too.
Yeah.
And how recent is, so you said the original came out in 15, and then how recent
2015, the expanded edition came out. We had it, we released it on June 16th, 2018, for the 40th anniversary.
Awesome. Awesome.
And I think that's what I have. I ended up getting it on Kindle, so I have that expanded one.
But do you have the color expanded one?
The Kindle is black and white.
Oh, well, I need send me your addresses. Email me your addresses, and I'll send you a couple copies of the color one. Comes with a Jaws 2 trading card.
Oh, wow. That'd be great. That'd be great.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Well, hey, Michael, thank you so much for being here with us, and really just some awesome insight into this film. And do you got anything new to plug coming up, or where can people find you?
I have a entertainment website called MediaMikes.com. We do film reviews, concerts, that kind of stuff, books. I'm still working, thinking about my next book project. I was asked to do Jaws 3, but I knew, Joe Alves was doing his biography. And then he was, him and a friend of mine, Dennis Prince, they are doing a Jaws 3 kind of like companion book. They are working on that also. Right now, I'm just trying to find something that makes me want to give up 4 years of my life. And when I do, I'll write it, hopefully.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that's I guess that's it for us today. And everybody, you can check us out on the Facebook page. And you can give us a little cashola on the PayPal, and what else, Jer?
Yeah, check us out on Facebook. Help the cause on PayPal. Help pay for our microphones and hosting. And make sure you check out Michael A. Smith's book on the making of Jaws 2. I'm reading it. It's great.
And, yeah. I tell you what, if I can, if I may, if you email me at mikes@mediamikes.com, and tell me that you, if you're interested in buying the book, if you heard about it here, I will donate $10 to this podcast.
Oh,
for
wow!
For each one sold.
So there you go. There you go. There you go, folks. So thank you very much, Mike. And
my pleasure. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, no, it was a blast. Folks. So take him up on that, please. And you can catch us next time right here on The Real Jaws Minute.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.